whilst we wait for Commissioner Gowan, Honorable Killian and Bazoli, order, whilst we wait for Commissioner Gowan's person to arrive with this stick, just a couple of things. I trust if she's not here in time that we allow him to start, because we've got the presentation here. When the person arrives, we can set it up and then carry on. The other matter that I want to say, honourable members, is we continue to keep our fingers crossed for the application that we have made to travel outside of the country. The secretary would have contacted you to talk about the official passport, and that the secretary have made arrangements for you, those of you who don't have the passport sorted out, to do something after this meeting. So may I ask that you, because let's just do this thing together, because if we're going to go there individually, it's not going to help much. That's where we are with the application. I think I did say that we have been asked to resubmit it again. If that is in order, honourable members, may I welcome all of you to the meeting. May I take the opportunity to welcome Commissioner Gowan to the meeting, and any other people that accompany him. He will inform us about that. May I welcome members of the department and ministry that are here also, and then all the rest that are in the room. Welcome to this meeting. The apologies that we have is Honourable Kubisa, Honourable van der West Hazen. I think those are the only ones.
Honourable Formula asked me to apologise,
though.
She
and the by elections. By elections, yes. May the ANC win all of them.
Yeah.
And then, honourable members, the agenda is the briefing of the South African Human Rights Commission, of which we will then discuss, and thereafter we will get a presentation, as we agreed in the meeting last week, that we'll get a briefing on the analysis from an outside research group, which we will discuss, and that's the agenda. Are we agreed, honourable members? Thank you very much, everyone. Over to you, Commissioner Gowan. If there's anyone else with you, you may introduce.
Yes. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for the opportunity. We really welcome it from the Commission side. It is very important that Parliament engages with the Commission also on its reports and recommendations, because on the one hand the Commission is accountable to Parliament, and on the other hand the Department, in this case Department of Higher Education and Training, is also accountable to Parliament. So in that sense Parliament, I think, and portfolio committees of Parliament can play a very important role in also assisting the Commission as a Chapter 9 institution to make sure that its recommendations are taken seriously and are implemented and so on. I am accompanied by Fadla Adams, but I see she hasn't arrived yet, so what I would propose in the meantime, I know that the presentation has been distributed. I don't know how to work your computer, so if you can maybe work it whilst I go through the written version, that would help a lot. And then I also see... Okay, yes, okay.
Then why
doesn't
it sit here and help?
Maybe you can...
Ben will help you.
Yes, if you can just, as I go on, maybe just go through the pages and Fadla can take over when she comes. I also see very important people here from the department. We're very happy to see that, as well as the chairperson. I think you're the chairperson of the Transformation Oversight Committee, a absolute critical role play in this whole matter of transformation in universities. So our report specifically dealt with transformation at the public universities in South Africa, and I will deal with, I will go through the presentation dealing first of all with the background of our investigation, our public hearing that we had, the purpose of the hearing, the approach to the hearing, stakeholders who participated, areas of inquiry and submissions, the findings that we've made, recommendations, and the current status and way forward. Maybe I should also say that we have also taken the view after the Nkandla judgment, Fadla has arrived. Fadla Adams is our parliamentary liaison officer, so she's specifically responsible for liaison with Parliament. So following the Nkandla judgment, we have also taken the view that our findings are also, especially when it deals with specific human rights violations, our findings are binding, and that in addition to recommendations, we will also in future, depending on the circumstances of a particular case, be in a position to even issue directives. That just by the way. So in terms of the background, so Fadla, maybe if you can just, as I go through, you know, at the background, change there for us. Some of the there were some incidents that made it necessary for us to hold a national hearing, specifically the death of a student at Stellenbosch University during an initiation event, and you will see later on that initiation is one of the issues we specifically also looked into. Secondly, the 2008 Rates 4 incident at Free State University, all of us are very much aware of that one. And the Commission's investigation into alleged racism and unfair discrimination at the Northwest University following the tragic death of a first-year student during an orientation program at that university. It was also, maybe I should just in passing mention, that one of the matters flowing from the Rates 4 incident eventually was that the Commission insisted that the university establish a center for human rights, and that has indeed also been done at that particular university. In 2012, the next page, the Commission had conducted a number of interviews and surveys at 23 public universities, all the 23 public universities, and we've established that university transformation policies had placed an emphasis on numbers of students enrolled, and not also on integration as such. So the whole emphasis was on demographics, numbers of students enrolled, and you'll later on also see that in our view transformation goes much further than that, although the demographics is a very important matter. In 2014, further allegations of racism and unfair discrimination at public institutions of higher learning came to the fore following a racially motivated incident in which two white students from the University of the Free State drove over a black student and assaulted them. So in terms of the purpose of our investigation, the decision to host this national hearing on transformation in public universities was against the background of reports of racism and racial discrimination in some public universities. The Commission was cognizant of past efforts that had been undertaken to address issues of transformation in public universities, because there have been a number of efforts and investigations and all the like. The hearing intended to assess specifically the effectiveness of the initiatives and efforts to transform public universities and to critically examine whether, in view of the imperative of transformation, our universities have indeed sufficiently transformed. In particular, the Commission sought to determine the following matters: whether public universities have sufficiently transformed not only with regard to race, but also with regard to gender, language, culture, disability and sexual orientation, amongst other matters. And then also, whether the factors or the specific factors, if any, that have hindered transformation, we also seek to establish that. So one of the specific findings we've made also in this regard is that there is not a general understanding, same kind of understanding, common understanding among everyone concerned, also all universities, as to what exactly the term transformation entails. So the Commission, in also looking at international instruments, at our constitution as such in particular, came up with a specific definition in the context of the constitution and for purposes of higher education. And our definition is the creation of a system of higher education which is free from all forms of unfair discrimination and artificial barriers to access and success, as well as one that is built on the principles of social inclusivity, mutual respect, and acceptance. And we very specifically said that transformation should be seen in the light of the founding provisions of the Constitution, the preamble of the Constitution as such, the founding provisions, and then also the equality clause. So in terms of the approach to the hearing, it was an inquisitorial approach that we followed as opposed to an adversarial approach. The Commission invited a number of respondents and stakeholders to provide information, and the Commission examined and evaluated submissions and evidence provided to it. So the stakeholders, I'm not going to mention all of them, but maybe Fadla, you can see it's a wide variety of stakeholders, including number of universities and the Department of Higher Education and Training, the Higher Education Transformation Network, Universities South Africa, the voluntary body of universities in South Africa working together, the Transformation Strategy Group, Professor Kiert's Transformation Oversight Committee, and a number of other stakeholders. Also including, you'll see on one of the pages there, the SRCs, the Student Representative Councils of various universities. So as far as the areas of inquiry and submissions are concerned, the Commission sent out questions which formed the basis of the submission. The areas investigated included the historical legacy of higher education in South Africa and progress made with regard to transformation, university culture, language, and the role of sport, student demographics and student performance, demographics of the academic staff, initiation practices, orientation programs, and obviously the importance of the differentiation between those terminology, university curricula, the transformation policies at universities and structures that deal with transformation at universities, the autonomy of universities and the potential impact of that on transformation, accommodation and student residences, governance and role players in the transformation of higher education, complaints handling processes, funding of universities, that obviously has subsequently now also been overtaken by the findings and so on of the Presidential Commission in that regard, and collaboration, the importance of collaboration between universities, interdepartmental and intersectoral. So the main findings that we made after now, because we had numbers of presentations, submissions made to us, and typically what would happen is there would be a panel of the Commission with at least two commissioners, I think, being present on that particular panel. We'll hear all the evidence, ask questions and so on, and then after that disseminate everything and come up with specific findings and recommendations, and as I mentioned earlier, in future also in certain circumstances directives. So these were that public universities, public universities have not sufficiently transformed in the last 20 years, specifically the period up to when this report was released, 1996 to 2016, with regard to race, gender, culture, language, disability, and sexual orientation, among others. Inequalities, patterns of systemic exclusion, marginalization, and subtle forms of discrimination continue to persist in public universities. You'd sometimes find, and that was also one of the submissions we specifically received, that sometimes you get forms of overt and covert racism. You know, it's not, and sometimes it's also inadvertently, in a sense. But the culture of the university, or of a specific campus of the university, is of such a nature that it is exclusive and is not really inclusive, doesn't allow people to, and students really, to feel welcome. And so that is one of the things that we have to take into account. To access to and success at public universities continue to be stratified along racial lines. However, no clear plans to eradicate these disparities were forthcoming. Three, there is a need for public universities to review their orientation programs to ensure their effectiveness in fostering inclusivity and a human rights culture within public universities. You'll see if you read the report that sometimes we find that these orientation programs would only focus on maybe financial matters, how the university works, and so on. And there's a real need, I think, and this is a real an opportunity for universities to step forward and to make sure that a human rights approach forms part of these orientation programs, as well as inclusivity matters and related matters, so that it doesn't only go about administrative kind of issues. The need then also, fourthly, for comprehensive diversity programs which address initiation practices and orientation has not been sufficiently addressed. Initiation practices in some public universities persist, unfortunately. There is a need for continued engagement between university management and student bodies, as well as a need for the introduction of human rights education in the university curricula in order to root out initiation practices. Now, this is quite a critical matter. And I think maybe the portfolio committee can also play an important role when you speak to universities, the department, as such as well. And that is that I really, we really believe, and I have touched base already with USAF, University of South Africa, in this regard, and also with some of the vice chancellors, that there is a opportunity for having, and we don't want to prescribe to universities exactly how it should look like, but for a possibility of a cross-cutting module dealing specifically with human rights and related issues. And the idea was even mooted, I think, by the when I had discussions with the Vice Chancellor of UCT, that maybe as a point of departure, it would be good to at least have an online module available, a cross-cutting module, and one can then decide whether it should be compulsory to complete that for purposes of completing your studies, or that it's more incentivized, or however the case may be, in terms of dealing with that. But I think this is something that we really want to put forward as a critical aspect. If we could have, at least as a starting point, a cross-cutting module dealing with human rights and other issues, then it would absolutely be an important step forward. Then fifthly, there is a need for greater inclusivity in the design and development of university curricula, as well as a need for universities to continuously review their curricula to ensure its responsiveness to broader societal issues and concerns, and also its responsiveness, obviously, to the economic needs of the country. Sixthly, some universities' residence placement policies have failed to adequately take into account the financial needs of students, as well as the particular needs of students with disabilities. So the residence placement policies would take into account, usually it would be a mixture of maybe having some kind of a quota on the one hand, on the other hand, academic achievement and so on, but we have found that it is not, really going far enough in taking into account all the issues concerned, in particular the financial needs of students, because the poor students are specifically marginalized if they are put in a position where they cannot afford these, or they're not allowed entrance into the residences. Then they, being the poor and the marginalized, need to go and find private, go to private residences and so on. We know the costs of that is much more. So this is an issue, I think, that needs to be taken quite seriously. In the seventh place, the department, in our view, has not played, and maybe I should just interrupt to say that following this report now, we have, just after the new Minister Pandor took office, we did receive a reply from her concerning a number of the recommendations that we make, and we do have to, we want to acknowledge that there has been some progress done since then as far as these matters are concerned. But we're saying that we're finding that the department has not played a sufficient role in the transformation of institutions of higher learning. In particular, we found that the department has failed to consistently hold institutions of higher learning accountable for the lack of transformation in their respective institutions, despite being empowered to do so in terms of the Higher Education Act. And I know there's also been subsequent amendments and so on that actually strengthens the position of the department. So in our view, the department really needs to step forward in terms of holding universities accountable if transformation is not at the level, taking place at the level that it should indeed take place. Then eighthly, there is a need for public universities to review their governance models and structures in order to ensure that such structures and models do not hinder transformation. One would, for example, find that the Senate at some universities would only consist of so-called full professors. So, I mean, you know, it is quite easy to do a few amendments there and to make sure that that it is broadened and it is more inclusive as far as that is concerned. Nine, whilst most public universities had complaint handling procedures in place, such complaints handling procedures were underutilized by students, which points to the ineffectiveness or the inaccessibility of some of these complaints handling procedures. Now, the complaints handling procedures become quite important, especially also with regard to individual complaints. If there is issues that students want to complain about, then, the complaints handling procedures should be well known. It should be known where to get hold of that. It should be easily accessible. There should be a number of possible avenues in terms of making use of that, and therefore we thought that universities need to do more in terms of getting these complaints handling procedures at the level that it should be, and the accessibility level and so on as well. 10, the higher education sector remains underfunded, thereby contributing to the slow progress of transformation in the sector. Commission also found that through its funding allocation model, the department has inadvertently contributed to the perpetuation of inequalities between the former black universities and the former white universities. So obviously there has been certain developments as far as funding issues are concerned that we all are aware of, and that happened after the publication of this report. 11, collaboration between former white and former black universities has been inadequate. The Commission found that there is a need for greater collaboration amongst the various government departments, such as the Departments of Basic Education and Labour, as well as amongst the various actors within the higher education sector engaged in the project of transforming institutions of higher learning in South Africa, i.e. the TOC, the Transformation Strategy Group. That strategy group is one of the is connected to this University South Africa. So the TOC is the ministerial appointed government leg, if you want to call it that. The TSG is connected to the voluntary USAF, which means that the TSG doesn't have decision-making powers and so on. It is more of an advisory body, and then also USAF and the DHET. So then we come to the... So that is usually also how we work. We come up with specific findings based on the evidence put before the commission, and then we make recommendations based on that. So the commission made recommendations to a number of entities, but most of the recommendations are directed at the Department of Higher Education and Training and public universities. So some of these recommendations include the following. One, that the department must play a leading role in the transformation of institutions of higher learning and should exercise its powers in terms of the Higher Education Act to hold universities accountable for their lack of transformation. Secondly, that the department should require university councils to report annually on the state of transformation at their respective universities. Thereafter, the department, together with the Transformation Oversight Committee, Professor Kiert's committee, should produce an annual report on the state of transformation in the higher education sector at the national level and provide a copy of same of this report both to the Commission and to Parliament. Three, all universities must include bodies such as student representative councils and trade unions in the development of their transformation plans and strategies, and must encourage these bodies to play a central role in monitoring perceptions and incidents of unfair discrimination occurring on the ground. Four, universities must ensure that human resource policies prioritize the recruitment of underrepresented and or previously disadvantaged persons, particularly academics and leaders in senior posts. One of the excuses, if I can put it like that, that one finds is that universities would say that there's a pool of black professors, for example. And you know, they can only recruit basically from this pool, and there's a lot of competition to, and so on. So we need serious interventions as far as that is concerned. One of the interventions that the department would say would be a good one is to encourage more and more PhDs, so that we get more people in a position to occupy these positions. Five, universities must develop policies to regulate the appointment of retired academics as academic consultants. The policy should inter alia restrict the appointment of retired academics to limited circumstances, i.e. as part of a skills transfer program or as part of an initiative to retain necessary expertise. Six, the Department of Labor, together with the Department of Higher Education and Training, and Employment Equity Commission should initiate a consultative process through which reforms in respect of human resource policies at universities may be strengthened beyond quota-driven targets. Seven, all universities and faculties should ensure that adequate and effective early warning systems are in place to identify students that require additional support early on, with a view of improving success rates and decreasing attrition rates. So what you would find is there would be support systems in place, but it is upon the students to approach those. And we say that one should also have early warning systems and then a referral system, in a sense, that students are referred for assistance. And that there is therefore a duty also on lecturers and so on, professors, to identify that this student could benefit from further assistance. Eight, the Department of Higher Education and Training, in collaboration with the Transformation Oversight Committee and other relevant stakeholders, must conduct an assessment of the impact of language policies on institutional culture and social integration, and must draft guidelines or best practice to assist universities in implementing language policies in a manner that promotes integration and access. So we find now, that the language policy issues, both in schools and universities, are quite, that is quite an issue in our country at the moment. We see that with the, we saw that with the Oeverfaal matter and so on. So as a commission, we're also planning, and we will invite this committee as well to that. We're also planning to have a colloquium and look into specifically the application of the rights in this regard, pertaining to language, official language of choice for purposes of education with the qualifiers that we have in Section 29, but then also the transformation issues and so on, to see to what extent these matters can be balanced out. So, for example, at the University of the Northwest, the commission also, in terms of its findings, now it viewed this matter, thought that the simultaneous translation services that is being used at the Northwest University seem to be, maybe a better solution than, for example, parallel medium and dual medium and so on. Because with a parallel medium universities operating on that basis, one would often find that would have one class with white Afrikaans-speaking students and then the other one with African and Indian and white English-speaking students. And that is a bit of an issue. You would know that there was also a minority judgment in that particular case, but in the Free State University case, the Constitutional Court found that in practice, the parallel medium program of the University of the Free State led to unfair discrimination. So within that context, I think it is important to look into the whole matter of language, transformation, and how all these things should be balanced in the best way, and therefore the identification of best practice in this regard is quite important. 9 universities offering simultaneous interpretation, there's that point, services must take measures to include, so that is the one criticism that we have of, for example, the Northwest model. It should take measures to include African languages on an equitable basis. Moreover, 10, where students are enrolled in programs that require them to interact with a diverse community, such as health sciences and social work, universities should require students and staff members to take African language courses. 11, the language and disability policies at institutional and or regional inter-university level must specifically accommodate persons with disabilities, including but not limited to persons who are deaf, partially sighted, and blind persons, to ensure that access to higher education is not inhibited to persons with disabilities. 12, one is that the Department of Higher Education and Training should closely monitor the occurrence of initiation practices and take strong measures to curb such practices. 13, universities must also implement greater monitoring mechanisms aimed at preventing transgressions and holding persons accountable, while student representative bodies must play a central role in monitoring and reporting on incidents. Next one is that all universities must ensure that human rights and diversity training is offered to all staff and students during orientation programs. Specific orientation programs should also be developed to educate students on the prohibition and impact of initiation practices. 15 university departments and academics should regularly review the content of curricula to ensure that the content and the method of teaching are socially relevant and responsive to the development needs of our country. Next one is that the department, in consultation with National Treasury, should give particular attention to the need to develop and or expand the existing stock of student residences for all universities, but particularly for historically disadvantaged universities when allocating budgets. Moreover, the department should engage with private sector stakeholders and the Department of Human Settlements with a view to developing additional decent and accessible student accommodation off campus. One would find that residences, and that's why we also zoomed into this matter, is a very important part of university life. I mean, the numbers of students also that that are in residences, and so the cultures of these residences is also becoming very important, and that it is inclusive and people feel welcome, and that you don't have old traditions coming maybe from the apartheid years or whatever that are still right there and that are not in line with our new democratic dispensation and our constitution and our Bill of Human Rights. You would also sometimes find that that alumni of these residences would still play, and we bring it out in our report, would still play some kind of a part in even decision making pertaining to certain issues regarding the residences, and we say that you know, their influence should also be limited as far as that is concerned. Universities must take 17 measures within available resources to ensure that all residents and other facilities are accessible to persons with disabilities. Furthermore, while academic performance should not be disregarded in the allocation of residences, this should not be the sole consideration when residential places are allocated. Other factors that must be considered in the allocation of placements include financial needs of students, the ability to access adequate private accommodation. The needs of persons with disabilities, once again, must be given priority. Because over and over again, you know, if you're dealing, for example, with schools, you find the same kinds of issues, that there is not enough attention being given to the needs of learners with disabilities. There's even a court case at present pertaining to learning and teaching support material for learners with disabilities. So that is an issue I think that this committee also within the university and the higher education context should really assist us with and look into. 19, the department in consultation with all relevant stakeholders is required to identify standard performance indicators with a view of measuring transformation progress of institutions. 20, the TSG, that's now the Transformation Strategy Group linked to USAF, should facilitate increased collaboration between historically white and historically black universities with regard to capacity building and resource sharing. 21, the last one I want to highlight at this stage is that the department in consultation with all relevant stakeholders is required to identify standard performance indicators with a view of measuring transformation progress of institutions. I think I've read that one. So developments since the hearing, we're very, very well aware that since this hearing, a number of key developments have transpired. These included roads must fall, fees must fall, Afrikaans must fall, outsourcing must fall, and the commission of inquiry into the fees issue. And we also make the point in our report that in view of some of these developments that we were aware of when you know, compiling the report, we would strongly considering having a follow-up report from our side to deal with some of these issues. But we still believe that the recommendations and the findings and recommendations in this report remain relevant. So since the hearing was finalized in 2016, a new set of commissioners assumed office in January 2017. The commission in its 2018-2019 annual performance plan has now also committed ourselves to following up on numerous recommendations. And recommendations in this report will also receive that attention, because you have found that the commission has produced numbers and numbers of reports, but, you know, the follow-up on recommendations hasn't been, you know, that well, and we believe that the focus should rather be there, and that is why we are very serious also about the matter of our recommendations being implemented. And then we appeal to you as the portfolio committee to also assist us in the process of making sure that the recommendations receive the necessary attention and that they are implemented. And I think one of the ways, for example, I've also appeared before the Basic Education Portfolio Committee pertaining to our report on the impact of protest action on the right to a basic education. And also explaining to that committee that if we really look at how the constitution is structured and so on as well, the commission is accountable to parliament, as I pointed out earlier. The department is accountable to parliament, and in that sense I think the relevant parliamentary committee can play an important role in terms of holding the department to account, and maybe even call the department as a follow-up to this to indicate to the committee what the department's response is, to what extent the department is implementing the recommendations, and so on. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Gaum. Honourable members, before I ask you to engage, we've got Professor André Kiet also here. From the department, and I think let's give them an opportunity too.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, honourable members. It's great to be here, actually. I was previously working at the Human Rights Commission as a deputy chief executive, So I used to visit in and out here, you know. I had a break for a few years now, trying to become an academic. And the minister appointed me as the chairperson of the Transformation Oversight Committee in the middle of last year as well. We have a good, solid team now in place, and we would like to play a constructive role with regard to transformation oversight of higher education institutions. I've met with the Human Rights Commission after the release of the report to try and work out synergies and collaborations and, you know, sharing of resources, sharing of different sets of objectives, and we came out of a very productive meeting, and those decisions have been captured in the action plan for the TOC. And since the department has put in place a secretariat for my members to do their work, we are now steadily moving along in looking at the Human Rights Commission's report, responding to that, and also converting that into our own strategic objectives. There's a very useful document, Chairperson, out, and that is a document compiled by the department that clusters all the recommendations that have been made since the mid-2000s into a particular formulation, so that the synergies of the various reports within the system comes together into almost like a transformation national strategic plan for higher education institutions. And bringing these together in this way, of course, will also assist in the kind of, you know, reporting fatigue that higher education institutions more or less sometimes complain about, because this is now clustered in a way like this. From our side, our main function is advice to the minister around the issues of higher education transformation. And the key areas of focus that we have now at the present moment is the transformation charter on a national level, and what the commission referred to with regard to measuring and key performance indicators for identifying whether transformation shift in this or that direction. The areas of focus would be policy implementation and, of course, advice on policy constructions. To that end, we are key in the national plan for the implementation of the PSET sector now. That's presently on the cards, which will also come via this committee, I assume. The key performance indicators, given the challenge of both autonomy and accountability within the sector, which is always a very good thing to have on the table, because those kinds of debates need to be pushed to its margins in a variety of ways, where one both supports and strengthens the system, but also allows for greater public accountability as well through the varieties of structures that we have on a national level, In that space, we would like to put forward various forms of guidelines for universities to measure themselves and also to be accountable on a much broader level via its link to the Department of Higher Education and Training. The areas that seems to be of particular concern within the university sector, and that cuts across all 26 universities, Chairperson, and that is institutional culture. Institutional culture does not refer to a white and black issue at only historically advantaged universities. Mm-hmm. It's across the entire sector. And I know that USAF has identified that as one of its key areas of focus. If we can get that right, linked to our equity numbers, also curriculum change, and the teaching and learning project, of course, then the variety of other issues will fall into place from a transformation perspective. The logic here is that if we focus on the core mandates of the university and transform it at its deep core, then the peripheral issues like demographics and equity and those kinds of things will by its nature become a consequence of doing deep transformation work as well. The Commission is correct in saying that the argument with regard to a finite pool of the black professoriate within the system means that we all fish from the same pool and that the emergence of the new academics is a bit too slow for the system to have those equity and diversification at the level of the professoriate falling into place or even at the other ranks of the academy. And that is one of the areas that I know the department, New Generation Minister, the NGAP program and so on, is trying to look at. But apart from that, Chair, we have to keep in mind that empirically, in terms of sheer numbers, there are great shifts within the system post 1996, and we have to take that into consideration when we deal with the issue of the transformation challenges that remains a lingering remnant of so many of our historical experiences. Now, Chair, so I would like to stop there and say that if there is a way in which you would like us to form part of your own oversight role, and please feel free to call on the Transformation Oversight Committee.
May I ask you what you have said? We obviously don't have, I saw you showing pages. May I ask, it will help if you give it to us also, so it forms part of our own minute and our report and so on.
For sure.
Would that be okay?
Yes, that will be perfect.
So, Honorable Bazzoli, I see your hand, and then the rest of the hands that I notice. Honorable Kitana, we can't hear the meeting anymore. You might want to step out of the meeting.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. So, generally, your recommendations seem pretty run-of-the-mill. It's all stuff that really is happening in many institutions, not all, obviously, and the department is already seized with many of them. So I must say, I think your report is maybe a little bit out of date now, because so much of what you are recommending is being handled or dealt with, and also was overtaken by, as you say, the events of the huge funding increase in higher education and the rendering some of the things that you've mentioned redundant, and the fees must fall and decolonization of universities movement, which has shifted the ground to some extent. But a couple of comments anyway. One is, I would like to have seen, and maybe it's something you could consider for the future, something that many vice-chancellors and proponents of transformation in universities have emphasized, which is balancing quality and transformation. Given that we need our students to have the highest quality university education possible. I have another set of points which seem to suggest that perhaps it's time that the Human Rights Commission and the department broaden their scope away from simply transformation towards a broader human rights consideration of the situation at universities. Because some human rights abuses that are seem to be occurring on university campuses are not directly linked to the kind of transformation issue that you've raised. For example, there's no mention in your thing of gender and gender-based violence on campuses. And this is a hugely serious issue. I mean, I had a letter yesterday from somebody at Walter Sisulu University saying there was a student there who was drugged and raped. They could not get hold of an ambulance to take her to hospital. Eventually, she was taken about 10 hours later to the hospital and not treated and not taken seriously. But there have been murders in Umtata, several murders and stabbings. So we're looking at students experiencing a life that really takes away their human rights in a more general sense. I think the condition of residences is also a human rights abuse. We've seen residence conditions in some places which are utterly unacceptable. The treatment of applicants at the beginning of the year by universities is not always one consistent with human rights. Doesn't matter what race they are, they get treated badly. People don't answer phones, they don't get admitted even though they should be admitted. Their whole career is at stake here and they are treated badly. The violence on many campuses, as I've mentioned one case, is also a human rights abuse. So it seems that as transformation initiatives now become embedded, and I'm not saying stop them, that's fine, carry them on, we need to broaden our scope to include broader human rights issues on university campuses. And perhaps, those are some of the examples that you might want to look at. And then my last point is, have you considered recommending an ombudsman on university campuses or even in the department who can maybe look at human rights issues more broadly on university campuses in the way that I've suggested? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Can you hear me? Let me do that.
Chairperson, thank you. I would like to say thank you very much for the presentation. I found it very interesting. And I do think, if I understand it correctly, the focus of the Human Rights Commission was specifically to determine the transformation successes at university campuses, so that we assess deeper than just figures, so many students gained access, etc. So my understanding was it was specifically focused on that. I may be wrong, but I would suggest that just if they review their report and they want to engage again with institutions, I think human rights abuses at universities, by criminals, by syndicates operating to sell spaces, etc., at institutions, by staff who disregard the human rights of students, etc., that should be part of a separate investigation, and perhaps that would help also transformation issues. So I just wanted to make that comment first. Secondly, Chairperson, I think what in the recommendations, and many of them are still very, very relevant, from our understanding when visiting institutions, it is clear that some institutions do all the tick box exercises, but the welcoming culture, a change to a new South African culture, has not happened. And I think that is why it would be necessary to develop specific guidelines. And I think it's going to be difficult. We must not underestimate that. It's going to be difficult because how do you assess conduct and climate? How do you really measure that? But nevertheless, we should not shy away from it, because I think that is where the very serious frustration at campuses lie. People feel marginalized financially, economically, notwithstanding new funding model, etc. People are coming from different institutions of secondary schools, etc. And in some respects, I think we underestimate academic exclusion at institutions as far as adequate standards are concerned, coming through from secondary schools into mainstream higher institutions of higher education. I think that is still a very serious matter, and we should not underestimate that. Some schools, the top schools in South Africa, students find it easier. So when you come and you face issues of language, tuition language, it's all of that that complicates matters further. Now, Chair, I am a little bit strained here because I've got this here, but I'll grab it, this document. It's just this microphone is very short. I wanted to pose specific questions, and I think what we need to get... first of all, if the Human Rights Commission, they said that new commissioners came in, they will review their report and see what changes have occurred since it was finalized and to what extent they need some follow-up. So I would like to suggest that that would be a very good one, especially since the department already had some time to address some of these issues and see how they can develop the necessary program. Secondly, I would like to know from the department, apart from the TOC that was established, I don't know how long it has been there, Professor, and your role, have you developed an implementation plan to see to what extent the department and, we can do that? And can you tell us, do you find anything that would... in fact hinder better oversight? Will the university statutes prevent you to do proper oversight of what is happening? Is there that issue? Because you see, we should not confuse academic autonomy with the need to ensure that there is public accountability of institutions that derive vast sums of money from the public purse. And I think we have a responsibility, and the Human Rights Commission will hold us accountable to move beyond that. Do you find that anything there would prevent better oversight? And lastly, Chair, the NGAP program. Could the department please tell us? Because you see, I hear what Professor Pazzoli is saying with regards, and we should be very cautious that we don't block quality in specific sectors of society. You know, quality education, people moving into the higher education sector. It comes from all over society that you get quality. Some people are poor and come from impoverished backgrounds, but they are actually excellent students. Now, the issue is, to what extent are we moving on the NGAP program? And do we find problems that, in fact, block the progress of that program? And what can be done to, in fact, make sure that we move faster on that? If you move on to a transformation charter, you suggested that there should be guidelines for universities. Would they get any legal control measures in regulations, or will it simply be guidelines and institutions could implement instead of should be compelled to implement? Could you please indicate whether that is foreseen in the future? Thank you.
Any other member?
Thank Yeah, Chair, I didn't understand the concept raised by Honorable Pozoli about broadening human rights violation investigations, because I don't know how more they can be broadened, because what she's mentioning is already there. If a lady is raped, rape is already there. If she's not attended at the hospitals and our public institutions doing their work, all those things are already covered. So I really didn't know how it can be broadened further than what is already there, covered by our legal system, by our constitution, and by all our checks and balances mechanisms in the country. So I just need clarity there.
You will do so over tea time. Any other member? I'm very cautious about the what is it, student-lecturer relationship. Very cautious about Any other member? No? Yes, Ntunu?
Thank you for the presentation. I would like to find out why do these initiation practices happen in historically white institutions, and they continue to happen despite policies that prohibit them? What have you found out maybe in that regard? The department has been allocating funding to universities to address access of students with disabilities. I would like to know whether the Commission feels this is insufficient. In other words, are universities, in your view, doing enough in this regard? Because this is part of human rights, access for those with students with disabilities. The committee has processed the Higher Education Amendment Bill in 2016, of which one of the amendments was to empower the minister to develop a policy on transformation in consultation with CHE. There was a lot of contestation, especially from universities, from DHET. I would like to know what progress has been made by the minister in developing such a policy. What is the role of the Commission in cases where there are intentions by certain groupings to thwart the efforts of universities to transform? Legal challenges against the University of Pretoria, Stellenbosch and Free State when they developed the language policy to effect inclusion. I'm not sure, maybe you spoke on this, but I was just wondering, why was University of Stellenbosch not part of the stakeholders that participated in this whole exercise that you were doing? What did the Commission do about the Afrikaans exclusive private residences at the University of Pretoria? Because one of your findings is... was it number six? In one of the findings, it's your point six, on slide 18, you say the Commission has also found that some university placement policies have contributed to the lack of transformation and social integration within institutions of higher learning. I think at University of Pretoria, this is one of the maybe findings in your investigation, and just want to know whether, when you find these things, do you have any kits, or it's just recommendations, and then that's where you end? Thank you, Chair.
thank you very much from my side equally, and thank you to Commissioner Gaum for the presentation. And I think the little bit that the department gave us at this point, we certainly wish to hear a bit more detailed response as it relates to both your work with the HSRC and moving forward in any event, the department's obligation, both constitutionally, legislatively, and otherwise, as part of your functions as a department that you have to undertake, notwithstanding what the HSRC is saying. My point is, we're thankful to the HSRC, but we think that there are some things which, in any event, it's not that you have to wait for the HSRC to do. Secondly, I think, honourable members, we should maybe consider asking the HSRC, together with the Gender Commission, to do a little bit more as it relates to a gender dimension at our institutions. I say this when we look back at the, you know, the different occasions at the institutions. One of the things that I'll never forget is there were very many women in leadership. When the fees must fall and so came, who was the first ones to be oppressed? Were the women. Just move them aside, push them out of the way, go away, and they just became a non-existent. Now, as we develop and transform our entire society, I don't think you can place the higher education institutions outside of that entire realm. It becomes many a time a microcosm of what is happening out there also. So you have to bring those realities into this entire discussion. So you don't find a poor student at the university, you find poor people in South Africa. You don't find inequality in Port Elizabeth, you find inequality in South Africa. So we're going to try and separate these things. This is absolutely not going to work. So I think on the aspect of women and women development in education, we should maybe bring the two of you together, Commissioner Gaum. It is a known fact that at a lot of the institutions, it's a silent suffering of women going on to the extent where we must voice our opinion as a committee much louder, I think, than the statement that I released when I was approached on many of the cases from the person that were sentenced, that were at Walter Sisulu and was able to move around the country and murder and rape everyone else at other campuses, to the cases that CPUT gave me, to the intimidation at what is the university's name, UNISA, and so I can continue and continue. Having said that, I think we must welcome the launch the other day of the South African Police Service on the academy that was established. So the students were flooding me with messages saying how happy they are finally, but what a good thing of that is that it involves them and they are part of this entire council, the entire council thing. And so it would be good then to hear from yourself as the department, with, because remember we called all of them to our committee and we said so that we don't think the abuses against students, notwithstanding the issues, is the correct thing. You must maintain law and order, you don't abuse. And so we had a range of people at the committee. They have now moved on and established and have launched this unit, which is called the Campus Safety Students Cadets. And that Safety Student Cadets is linked to the WALL program, so, and having a lot of internship attached to it also. You might want to comment a little bit about it, because at least it's a tripartite one that includes the the private sector, who are being found wanting most of the time, and it includes the students and of course the South African police. So I think we must really welcome that effort that are being made, because it's unattainable that every day you open up the newspaper there's another women being that has been raped and murdered, and males also. I want to ask you further, can you say anything to us about on housing, Commissioner? There's something that is called a grading, establishment of some grading committee, commission around private accommodation that has been launched. Now, is this going to venture into, let's just protect ourselves as private people and make ourselves all safe and so on, or is there anything else that would assist the recommendation that you are making? One of the things that I don't see in your report, Commissioner, is if you look at the legislation, it says that there must be the council and many others, but it says there's an IF also. I don't hear you saying anything about the institutional forum. Now, I find this body quite an intriguing body. Squeezed between the council, the unions, the students, and many of whom, all of them, and many of them serving on this in this council also. And I don't know what the other members are saying, but my experience is that it is one of the weakest institutions, no? Bodies, not institution, one of the weakest bodies everywhere. So when you ask the IF, look, what have you done? None of the reports are encouraging. Why is there no investment into the fact that the Act says there will be an institutional forum? And even in your recommendations, Commissioner, why are you not talking about the investment in the institutional forum, in holding them accountable, and or finding out why this forum is not able to do all the things that you are saying in your recommendation? Why do you do what you do? So one of the issues that the intelligence, like labor market intelligence report says, is that there's a downward spiral on, you know, we have a huge amount of students that we bring, rightfully so, into our institutions, and those same numbers are not the same when they exit. So I want to ask, in doing an investigation and moving forward, if you can rather say towards what are you doing, apart from just human rights, if these things are all attached to the fact that our graduates and completion are being hampered by everything that you are saying, then I think that will help also. Let me make a simple example. So in the townships, in places where you find lots of bushes and no lights, obviously where high crime rate is. So in this same instance, can I make the same example? of that. I don't want to be alarmist. I'm just asking that, can you make the linkages towards those bigger things that are supposed to be there also? Let me stop there and ask both of you to respond, because I think this is an important presentation that we have of are we transforming in the instance of higher education and training also. I'm going to ask both yourselves, the department and yourselves to respond. I excited you about something, honourable member.
Yes, actually, it is just in relation to the issue of language and the commissioner's information about what would work as sort of mainstreaming everybody, you know, giving everybody equal access to language of tuition, etc., and what wouldn't work. I just wanted to know if the department has developed any guidelines for implementation of Section 29 of the Constitution in particular, and then obviously the other relevant human rights clauses are also language and culture, which is the next clause in the Constitution. And I was wondering if there is anything that was developed for universities, how to make sure that, you know, language is not, it does not become a barrier to tuition. Thank you.
All right. So if you complain about the budget, Commissioner, what about the budget? Does the budget allocation not address any of the things that, I think we'll be quite interested to unpack what it is that you say about the budget. Can I start with the department? Last, be first.
Yes, sure. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much also for this opportunity to engage with the findings of the Human Rights Commission report, although as the chairperson of the TOC had indicated, there's been quite a lot of engagement with those findings. But I think the interest of the Human Rights Commission in the university sector is welcomed, and I think that the report provides us with a very useful reflection point for the issues, especially as it arrived at a time when the Minister had the second transformation summit on higher education, and also given that the 2008 Sudeen report, which the Minister Pandor in fact had put in place in 2008, is now, you know, 10 years in the making. So that I think that the ongoing interest in the detail is really helpful. And I think that there are, I won't be able to touch on all the issues. Me, Chairperson, there's so many things I want to tell you about what's happened, because as Honourable Bozoli had indicated, there's much progress that's been made, and as politicians, we've also been involved in many of the initiatives that we are now implementing that in fact respond to some of these concerns. But of course, there are many areas where we have to make progress, and so it's really good to be reminded of them, including, for example, the initiation issues. For example, I think so many of the universities have stopped them completely, which is not to say that we mustn't be vigilant, but it's almost that it's just a few institutions where it might still be an issue, but so much has been done by the institutions to clamp down on some of these terrible initiation practices that I was almost reminded, oh, but that was a massive issue at some point, and we need to just maybe come back on it and remind ourselves about it. I think that there's been enormous progress in focusing on some of the issues of going beyond the numbers. But let me just try and respond to some of the specifics, and then Professor Kiaz can fill any gaps. I think on the WUSU issue and the issue of gender-based violence, I think wherever there are issues that we should be aware of, it would be great if we can do more work there. But I'm trying to get hold of the exact details of where it is. But the department has been working on a a national policy framework around gender-based violence for the institution through the working with the HEADS program, the HEADS program. And I am aware that it is being finalized at the moment. I don't think it's been publicly released, but I know that some really good work has been done. That I think is going to be launched later on this year. So, honourable members, I think we must keep you informed about that piece of work. It is definitely an issue that we need to pay more attention to. There are universities in the system that have done a lot of work around policy frameworks for gender-based violence, and in fact, some universities have quite advanced systems in place now. But the problem is that the implementation is uneven across the system, and we need to find a way of sharing the really good practices that are happening in institutions and finding ways of making it consistent across the system. In terms of an implementation plan for transformation, yes, a lot of work has been done. We've talked about the national plan here before. We're in the process of Minister Pandor, you know, since she's been in office, which is not very long, has had a chance to give us some guidance on that plan, and we are busy finalizing that as a planning framework. So there will be some indication there of the many ways in which the department is working around transformation. But maybe just to go back to some of the mechanisms that we do have. In terms of the department, we have the policy that we can put policy guidelines in place for the system. So we do have a way of engaging at that level. Then we have the funding framework, which has also been used over the years to steer certain elements of transformation in the system. So, for example, the fact that we have improved throughput rates across the system could, in part, of course, it's attributing to many things, and then it's many factors that, including, you know, better student funding, including improvements in the schooling system, including teaching and learning initiatives at universities. You can't say it's one thing, but certainly some of the funding frameworks, inputs. So, for example, around the supporting of foundation programs, etc., and now with the UCDP and the UC. University Capacity Development Grant that you will have heard about when we presented our APPs, that kind of work is really starting to have an effect. And then, of course, we have the quality assurance mechanisms as well. And one of the major ways in which we as a department have oversight of institutions is through the planning, through the reporting regulations. What we want to try and do is to try and streamline those a little bit because they are quite burdensome for the institutions. But those annual reports that we receive from institutions on all the grants that are given to the institutions, institutions submit biannual reports on governance issues, transformation matters, all of those things are submitted to us. And you will notice also in our APP as a branch that we are focusing on monitoring and oversight very much in terms of the work that we're doing as a university branch, because a lot of the focus is on being able to pick up issues in institutions. It can't be the only mechanism, but certainly the reporting regulations, which have been in place since 2014, are giving us more information. In terms of NGAP and that kind of work, look, NGAP is, in a sense, it's a stimulatory mechanism, but in terms of the money that's there in the grants, it's a kind of a drop in the ocean in terms of the numbers, because it's really not going to be able to get the kind of numbers in the system, but it is stimulating, at least in some areas, the development there. Look, I think we also need to change the discourses around what Professor Keert had indicated, that this idea that somehow young people don't want to work in our universities, that somehow young black people don't want to be academics. I think that's really an old discourse. I don't think it's the case anymore. You have more and more people getting PhDs. You have more and more young people who want to be academics. And I think that we're starting to see that shift. I think that what we also need to do is, we have a ministerial committee on the barriers facing black academics. I don't have an update for you on when that will be reporting, but that work is ongoing. What we do need to do is to identify the institutions that are actually doing good work in this area, because there are many institutions that are starting to really move in terms of changing the demographics of their academic staff, and we need to definitely do a lot more work there in stimulating across the system. By the way, the NGAP is only part of the broader South staffing South Africa's university framework, it's the SAUF, which is one of the funded programs in the University Capacity Development Grant. There's work being done on leadership and management development. There's work being done on precisely the issue of how retired academics can come back in to support the system, etc. So that's the SAUF, which, and maybe we will have to come and update you on that as well. In terms of social inclusion, there is a final policy framework on social inclusion that the department has, which is for the whole post-school education and training system. By the way, that has been gazetted. I can share that with you. There's a draft policy framework on disability, also again for the whole post-school system. A lot of funding has been put into the area of disability in terms of scholarships and bursaries and supporting individual students. I think there's a lot more that needs to be done in terms of reasonable accommodation issues across the system, areas of speciality across institutions. Work has been done, but I think that there's still a lot more to be done. I know the TOC is paying attention to this. In terms of the talks about the issue of statutes, I think the gender dimension, yes. Chairperson, I'm not aware of the SAPS program, but I'm going to go and find out about it. Yeah, maybe it's 2 hours at end of first meeting.
That's right, Sandy. You're opening yourself up for something now.
No, sorry.
I might as well ask you a question on NASFAS if that's the case.
You can definitely, Chairperson. Can I just talk about, do you want to ask that first? On institutional forum, yes. You see, the Act, the revised Act, which is giving institutional forums a very much clearer role, and councils are required to consult institutional forums, and when they do not do so, they do not take the advice, they must provide reasons. So, yes, it's a very complicated issue. We actually had a meeting about 2 weeks ago with the institutional forums, and they are very mixed. Actually, Chairperson, there are universities where the institutional forum is playing a very important role. But maybe that's not the majority of institutions.
Yeah.
You're right about the general trend, and it has been a very contested issue, but we are working on trying to strengthen the areas where the IF can play an important transformation role,
yeah.
And if we can support them to do that, then we must do that also as a dialogue-breaking mechanism. Often IF, that's where they've been very strong.
Yeah.
But it is a contested area, but we're trying to do work on it, Chairperson. Because the Act really
compounds. Let's conclude. So, anything, Professor
Keith? Yeah. Thank you, Chair. And again, thanks for the opportunity. The one question arises out of the tension between quality and transformation. I think that the research, especially in the UK and the USA, has shown that actually if you transform in better social just directions, that your quality is also sorted out, i.e. transformation is a quality enhancement mechanism. The two of them goes together, hand in hand. I agree with the idea of the broader scope of human rights issues within the university spaces, and I also know that we have a gender-based violence task team that's working on a policy framework, in any case, within the department space. There is assessment being done on the efficacy of ombuds across the system. There are two trends within our national system at the present moment around the governance and the complaints mechanisms. The one is the appointment of deputy vice chancellors at executive level that's focused on transformation. That's a particular growth area within the system. Those numbers will emerge and grow further. I think we have started with one or two a few years back. I think we are around six now, and the same goes for the growth in institutional ombuds. So one of the areas of assessment that we will have to do is to look at the efficacy of institutional ombuds and see whether that can be reformulated as a proposal for a national ombud. And that's the work that the TOC at the present moment is doing. So that's an advisory minute that will go through to the minister. The issue with regard to the variety of operations of syndicates and cabals within our higher education sector, that's a matter that needs to be sorted out with systemic interventions so that the universities can focus on its academic project and the contribution it has to make to the unfolding of our democracy in so many other respects as well. Of course, it is correct to identify institutional culture and the hostility and alienation that students feel within the sector as one of the key constraints for achievement, and that's precisely why it has been highlighted as a key area. But of course, it's also one of the toughest issues to tackle as well. And so we're working on that, on that, and see whether we can develop standards where that where the idea and the kind of slippery issues around institutional culture can be addressed. With regard to the implementation plan, Tande has already referred to that. I don't think that within the new legal and policy architecture around higher education that there is a hindrance when it comes to transformation oversight. I think we must now first test the new systems that have emerged over the past few years and see whether there will be any hiccups. But as far as the engagement with both individual institutions, USAF and the DHET is concerned, I can't see any constraint. And of course, much of this has also to do with the way in which the portfolio committees within the parliamentary setting has driven the issue of public accountability in any case. So there is a national discourse around public accountability, which more or less permeates the consciousness of our public institutions. And that plays into the fact that the universities now understand that they have a public accountability role, even if they have academic autonomy. So I don't have any concerns at the present moment on that matter, Chair. Just goes to show that modeling public accountability, like the processes within Parliament, goes a long way in generating discourses that plays out to serve our constitutional order. The Transformation Charter and Guideline, Tandy has spoken about the NGAP program, the issue of quality education as well. The one thing about the university sector is that the policy architecture and the legal architecture and the National Implementation Plan will more or less already present a charter for the sector. You only have to formulate it in a way that you can put it up, you know, in offices and in places. So it will be like a reformulation of the constitutional principles that are already underpinning the system. So it means that the legal connection to the charter will in any case be there, and the public accountability will in any case be there. But of course, we will have to consult on its framing. So the framing can't be anti-constitutional or anti the legal framework, but of course it will have very clear formulations of guidelines that ties and serve the legal order within the sector. The broadening of the human rights investigation member, I think that's a very good idea, and we have to deal with the issue of initiation practices and find those little pockets where it still exists, and of course deal with those in various ways. I have been involved in, you can remember that, Mr. Schwanfar, we can remember back, but the Human Rights Commission issued a report in 2001 on initiation practices after the death of a student at Stellenbosch University. And that report was actually chaired by Commissioner Leon Wessels at that time, and it has set more or less the scene for the eradication of the practices that we are seeing now. Here and there are a few hiccups, and of course it's much easier for the law enforcement and the university agencies to deal with those because they are few and far in between. The policy on transformation, Tandy has responded to that, and of course Commissioner Gao must respond to why Stellenbosch University was not part of the hearing. That difficult question will be for the Human Rights Commission. The link between, and Chairperson, you're right, I wasn't sure about how to engage with whether I should put more meat to the program that we have, but I can literally send it to the committee members for the records as well. We have very, very clear programs, we have clear objectives, milestones and so on, so that you can see how we work. It was not the Human Rights Commission who actually catalyzed the work of the TOC. The TOC worked on transformation long before the Human Rights Commission thought about the higher education sector. I'm just joking, Commissioner Gellner. We also know that the Gender Commission has had hearings in the sector, and I'm not sure whether they have reported to Parliament on their hearing. They had gender-based violence hearings with, I think, 6 or 7 universities last year, Chair. But the committee can ask the commission to...
Candy, don't do that. Allow him to speak. Don't intimidate him. Carry on from
the same Chair that...
Candy, we just ask you about Nestor's...
I'm the same Chair that would be a very useful intervention from the portfolio committee side if the commission can place that on the table via parliamentary processes as well. And you're right, I think that the struggle of women within the higher education sector is closely tied to, of course, our national challenges that we have. But the universities have to respond. The universities have to interface with community and society in much better ways. Then when it comes to housing, there's an interesting, and I do test the South African legal and protection frameworks from time to time. There's also a rental tribunal that engages with when residences have various forms of exclusions, that you can actually refer those to a rental tribunal. I think it's under the Housing Act. There is a protection mechanism that deals with university residences in that space. But that's in addition to the mechanism that you referred to, Chair.
It's the act that I brought to Parliament in my other life.
Is it? Or the rental tribunal, yeah? Yeah. And I have tested it now with complaints twice. It worked well. Very, very well. Within the university space, there were 2 test cases that I've lodged with the rental tribunal. Chair, I think that's more or less what I heard. Yeah, I'm not sure that I'm missing something out, but thank you very much for indulging me.
Commissioner,
yes. Thank you.
Calm, I think you must update the one slide that says things have moved on and put the stain must fall. It's also happening now.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yes, maybe I think it's important, once again, first of all, for the committee to understand the commission's mandate. It is to promote human rights, so that's the advocacy part of it. For example, we would try and make sure through promotion that the school curriculum and the university curriculum also contain human rights elements. That would be one example, or we would be involved as we are with the school moot court competition in schools and so on. That's the promotion of human rights. On the other hand, we also monitor human rights matters and we protect human rights. And our protection mandate is now where people would, for example, come and lay complaints to us and so on. So in deciding then whether we're going to have a national hearing on a specific matter, it has to be a matter of a systemic matter, a matter of public interest and so on in terms of our own complaints procedures. But that doesn't prevent people to lay complaints with us pertaining to the matters Honorable Rizzoli mentioned earlier, and then we investigate those particular complaints and we come up with certain findings and directives and so on. And if necessary, under certain circumstances, we even approach the court, for example, the Equality Court. You have seen it in the Vicky Momberg matter and these matters that have taken place. So, but in terms now of deciding on which specific matter we're going to have a national hearing, we obviously also have to take our own budget into account and so on. We can't have national hearings all the time on everything because there are a number of rights in Chapter 2 of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, as you all know. And, you know, so we need to decide what to prioritize at a certain point in time. So these issues pertaining to gender-based violence, the condition of residences, treatment of students, violence at campus, so on. Each of them can obviously form the subject for a whole investigation. And we have to decide what exactly to focus on and at which particular university or campus or whatever the case may be. But that doesn't prevent anyone from laying a charge with us. So, for example, you mentioned Honorable... the whole matter of Pretoria and the private residences and so on, as far as that is concerned, where it was an Afrikaans exclusive residence or two, inter alia Sonop is the one, and the other one is the Goede Hoop. So in that instance, as far as I can recall, there was a complaint with us. But now, once again, we need to make sure that we work together with the other commissioners. There's the Gender Commission, there's the CRL Commission. And if a specific complaint would be better fitted, let's say, with the CRL Commission, then we would typically refer it there, they will investigate it. And so the CRO Commission has come up with specific recommendations saying that the Goede Hoop residents need to be open to all races, and has stated that if that recommendation is not followed, it will approach a court of law as far as that is concerned. Then, so, yes, I agree, I actually agree with Honorable Killian that many and most of our recommendations in this report are still very relevant. It is not a negative thing that there has been progress pertaining to some of our recommendations. That actually shows that at least it's taken seriously, it's taken up by the TOC, it's taken up by the department, and so there has actually been some progress in implementing some of our specific recommendations. Honorable Chairperson, you referred to the fact that we didn't refer to institutional forums per se. We did make the recommendation that the that the Department of Higher Education and Training is required to develop best practice guidelines with regard to transformation of governance structures, of which the institutional forums obviously is one of the governance structures. And we've made certain specific recommendations with regard to that. But interestingly enough now, in her response, in the minister's response to our recommendations, specifically to the governance structures, she specifically mentions, which is actually also our experience in this regard, that it has been found that institutional forums have been ineffective, resulting in little or no internal dialogue between institutional constituencies on issues of transformation. In some institutions, they are marginalized and their role and status eroded. And then she indicates what the department is going to do to address that. The department has therefore taken initiative to develop guidelines with a view to revitalize institutional forums at universities to deal with transformation issues as envisaged in the White Paper and the Higher Education Act. In addition, the department plans to establish a community of practice of institutional forum chairpersons as an avenue for chairpersons of institutional forums to interact with the intention to exchange information, experiences, ideas, best practice, encourage development strategies to develop and support the IFs, the institutional forums. So this is in a reaction to specific recommendations pertaining to governance structures, including then the institutional forums, that has not been as effective as it should. And then just in response to Honorable Killian's question pertaining to the matter of language and language policy and specific interpretation of guidelines pertaining to Section 29, in that regard there's also been developments, and in a response pertaining to our recommendations on language issues and so on, the Minister does state that the department conducted a review of the current language policy for higher education, that is the 2002 one, in 2016, resulting in the submission of a draft reviewed language policy document to the Minister for approval, which is, I'm sure, something you will also want to look into going forward. The revised language policy framework in higher education seeks to promote multilingualism. That is our specific recommendation as well. Much more needs to be done as far as that is concerned. To promote multilingualism as a strategy to facilitate meaningful access and participation by everyone in the various university activities and in cognitive and intellectual development, as well as enforcing the use of all official South African languages across all institutional functional domains, including scholarships, teaching and learning, and wider communication. In essence, the primary objective of the revised policy is to ensure transformation in higher education through enhancing the status and roles of previously marginalized languages to foster institutional inclusivity and social cohesion. So that is the clear development from the department side, also in response to that specific recommendation that we have made. Just in response to Honorable Rizzoli's matter of that, you know, in a sense we need to balance quality and transformation and so on and so on and so on, I think Professor Keert made the point that an essential element of transformation is the quality matter as such. And in that regard, it is also not the case that quality and transformation are the one is excluding the other one at all. And if you look at the transformation-related issues pertaining to student performance, which basically relates to the quality matter on page 30 of our report, you will see some of the presentations made to us related to matters impacting on student performance, lack of funding, that's a transformation-related issue, the secondary schooling system that is not really on par, the institutional culture of universities, all kinds of reasons that are actually also mentioned within the student performance context. And then it is important to have a look at what exactly the University of Johannesburg has submitted during these investigations, national hearing that we had. First of all, it submitted, the University of Johannesburg, page 35 of our report, that in the first decade after its merger, the university's black academic staff component had, through a deliberate recruitment program, improved from 140 staff members at the point of the merger to 420. Moreover, the university's black student body had grown from so, and they then speak about all the supportive measures they've put in place together with this and so on. And then we come to the conclusion, that the university comes to the conclusion, that while much remains to be done at the university, these accomplishments demonstrate that with the right level of commitment, combined with clear strategic action plans, it was possible to simultaneously advance transformation and academic excellence. So I think we should be careful to say that the one is excluding the other. To a large extent, the quality issue is part of the transformation debate, and to a large extent it is also possible, as the University of Johannesburg has stated here during their submissions, you know, absolutely possible to advance both at this very same time. I think I have dealt with the language issue that Honorable Killian was mentioning, but I mean that is also one of the matters that we want to address during our colloquium on the whole issue of language in education and transformation and balancing the particular rights and determining, you know, which guidelines and so on there should be as far as that is concerned, because we have stated very clearly previously that we do not think it is a good idea that these matters necessarily end up in court-specific matters. I think there hasn't been enough guidance that has been given as far as that is concerned, and the Commission feels that it can play a particular role in that regard. As far as the why initiation practices continue to happen, Honorable, if you have a look there at pages 35 and 36 of our report, you will see that in the submissions made to us, Free State University of the Free State SRC, for example, indicated that these practices are based on the premise of tradition and culture, and that is why they believe it continues. The WITS SRC indicated that WITS, or there's been become a culture, you know, once again, that initiation practices has over 80 to 90 years become a culture at the university. The Northwest University indicates what is being done when there are transgressions of the policy not to have initiation practice, that disciplinary action is taken, and so on. And the Northwest University also says, while not in all instances, racism has also been found to be one of the drivers of some initiation practices. So, I mean, that is basically what we, what came to light during the hearing in terms of the submissions. What are the reasons why initiation practices are still continuing? And then we make very specific recommendations in that regard on page 37 of our report.
Are you done?
I think I'll leave it there if there are, you know, if members, honorable members feel that there are certain issues that have not been answered, then absolutely deal with them. And once again, want to thank you, Chair, for your indulgence as well as this invitation. I think it's important.
Honorable members, we have another presentation. I think we must thank the Human Rights Commission for coming to present their report. I think it's extremely insightful. It does help the committee to look at, you know, what are the ingredients that we need to further put into our oversight when we deal with all the institutions. May we ask the... So indeed, we thank you, Commissioner Daum, for coming to present. And of course, we look forward to you informing us on what progress are being made, and we might engage with you on what other areas we think we need to look at also. To the department, yes, thank you for coming. We've always asked, whenever you do a gazette, it does help to inform the committee. We never ever get any gazettes from you, ever, ever. So I think all of those that you are mentioning, it would be good to let it come to Parliament. We look forward to the colloquium that's going to be held, and I trust that we will get an invitation. Everyone is really not liking to send invitations to us. The universities never does. Department try. The colleges, you know, really not even interested in us. So we think it helps. I mean, it helps to engage the committee and extend these invitations. We do so if we can, apart from our parliamentary program. If we can't all go, we send one person at least, because it's important for us also to be involved. So yes, please invite us to the colloquium. And we have something to say also at colloquiums like that. We will follow up on the Gender Commission. And if that report that you said, I think you said there is a report,
I'm not sure, Chair.
Not sure, but you will double check. We will double check. We think this must be one of our major work that we must do around what's happening to women on at both the colleges and the universities. So we will follow up with the Gender Commission ourselves also to find out what have they done in this regard. And then indeed, we will write to the department to say that we have received this report, and we'll ask what the response is from the department to the report that the HSRC has done, and in particularly, obviously, the recommendations part. And we will obviously follow up, you know, insofar as our program will allow us on this matter. So I don't think we are done on this issue. It's a continuation of a range of different obligations that we have as a committee also to deal with this. Having said that, honorable members, may at this point I say that you are welcome to stay, of course, Commissioner Gaum, but you are free to take leave also of us moving to the next point on our agenda. to the department. Also, I take it you will stay but you are free to leave also insofar as the professor and so on is concerned. I think the rest are interested in the next point on the agenda.
Unfortunately, we'll have to leave, so
you are most welcome. May we welcome the Deputy Minister of Higher Education and Training. As they leave, honourable members, why don't we just take five and then have some refreshments and so on, and then at this point of the meeting we will then welcome the next presentation from the researchers that we will do. I remind you, honourable members, it's a continuation of the APP, the next one, and towards our final report of the committee on the APP. Let's take five.
I think that we can